Good evening.
Good evening.
Wow. So this is module 11 called Two Talks on Chants. And this is talk 2. And the two chants we will talk about tonight are the concluding request to the protectors and the dedication of merit. Last week, Michael Fagan talked on the four dharmas of Gyanpopa, which we're now all going to recite rather than just the leader, and the seven-line supplication to Padmakara, which we are not going to introduce here. We simply introduced it as something that someone could do in the morning in their own house if they wanted to do so. But we will repeat it tonight. So right now, let us simply begin with the seven-line supplication to Padmakara. Can we all recite it, please?
Home in the northwest of the land of Vidyana, on a blooming lotus flower, you have attained supreme wondrous city. You are renowned as Padmakara, surrounded by your retinue of many Shakyamunis. We practice following your example. Please approach and grant your blessing. Guru Padmasiri, Om.
So if people have further questions about that before we go on, this would be a good time to bring them up. Yeah.
Am I correct in assuming this is a section of the larger piece which happened last Saturday?
The Sadhana Mahamudra?
Yes.
Oh, you heard it in there, yes. Right? Did we read anything? No, I don't
think
it's
not actually
did.
In the Sadhana. No,
it's not.
Sadhana Mahamudra is a separate thing.
Yeah, but it is Padmasambhava. It's the same person.
Right.
And he's shown in different manifestations.
There is some similar language, yes. Mm-hmm. This is an invocation to him. Michael gave a talk on it. And one can see him both in a mythological context of a Tibetan hero or as a supplication to the inner wisdom within us.
So that's what, if you hear it said in the context of another's practice, it's basically being done in the way that Michael has expressed. It's acknowledging that.
Acknowledging our inner wisdom, which is beyond our personal self, yeah. Okay, we're going to move on then to the concluding request to the protectors, which I don't think you have in front of you, so don't try to find it. We're going to...
It's on the edge.
What we're going to do right now is I will recite it. And all you have to do is listen. You don't have to memorize, you don't have to analyze, you don't have to think about it, you don't have to think about the words at all. We'll do that later. Right now, just listen to the sound. That's a valid thing to do, even if the sound was in a foreign language. And then we will give you a copy and distribute it. So we need, who's going to do the tea offering?
Where is the tea?
It's right back there.
Okay. We do it with conjunction with tea, by the way.
We'll talk about it.
The explanation comes later.
Okay, if we were doing...
TEA.
Assemblies of oceans of Samaya bound accept this offering gift of Torma. May we yogins with our disciples obtain power, freedom from disease, long life, glory, fame, good fortune, and all great and vast enjoyments. Grant us the cities of the pacifying and enriching actions and so on, Samaya holders, guard us, support us with all the cities. May there be no untimely death, illness, duns, or obstructing spirits for us. May we have no nightmares, ill omens, or bad dealings. May the world enjoy peace, have good harvest, abundant grain, expansion of Dharma, and glorious auspiciousness. Accomplish whatever mind desires. Okay, now we can distribute the copies of it.
Are you going to talk about the CD?
Yeah.
Yeah, we'll talk about all kinds of things.
I know.
Sit down and we'll talk about everything that needs to be talked about.
Okay. Just relax, everybody.
Here we go. You don't need
it. Ask him, I will dare tell you.
Pardon? Yes, you may keep this. All the
time. Not okay to write on it?
Yeah, we can write on it. Oh, take okay. It home.
Well, unless you wanted to use it at home.
Well, sure. I'll start if you were going to use it.
If you have a shrine, we'll
take care of
you. You want to make an offering, a tea offering. It's like, starts just with the idea of being a reminder about. Well, next time you can keep that.
Well, we'll help them offer.
You,
yes, you are welcome to take this home, and we will discuss it. We are not going to be doing this in here anymore, and we are not going to be doing the Padmasambhava chant anymore here, but tonight we're doing all of these. So the reason why we made up those stock cards is because we'd like everyone to recite the four dharmas of Gampopa, and we'd like everyone to recite the dedication of merit, and we'd rather not interrupt to distribute things anymore. So if you have those two memorized, then you don't need stock cards. And I think we've pointed out that all the chants are online. You go to instruction and then drop the chants and songs, and you'll see our chant book. You have the whole thing?
Oh,
you can print the whole thing out. Okay, very good.
Michael, yeah. what is the picture where you have the
chant? Oh, he's a Mahakala. He's a really nice protective.
Forearm.
Yeah, he's if you look at him, he's quite Mahakala means the great black one. If you look at him, he's quite fierce. He's kind of fat. He has claws and fangs, and he has forearms, and he's holding horrible things, weapons and so on, such as a hook knife, a skull cup of blood. He's got forearms, and he's got a sword, and he's got something called a katvanga, which is a scepter which has a dried skull, a decaying head, and a freshly severed head on it.
So you see why we waited a while before we introduced the chant. Do you want me to bring it over so people can see it and
yeah,
pass it around?
Could, people could see it, yes. That would be fun.
We didn't rush into this.
Yeah. Okay. So nevertheless, he is not a bad guy. So before getting into that, I'd like to say just how we use this in our home. You can do something like that if you wish. What we do is, in the morning, we prepare the tea and set it out before an image of Mahakala, and it stays there during the day. Then either sometime around sunset or before going to bed, either time, we recite, or at least one of us recites the this protector chant, and then the tea is taken out the way Michael just did, and it's offered by dumping it or offering it. Yep.
offering is
offered.
It is offered.
It's not dumped.
It's offered in a place where people aren't likely to walk. But don't worry about the animals or anything like that. So the protectors are there to wake us up. They're there during the day to wake us up to mindfulness while we're going about our business during the day. The time of evening is a particularly vulnerable point for us because we may come home and just feel very collapsed and want to space out, and that's a good time to be reminded not to let bad things into our minds. And then at night we tend to go off and we don't know where we're going off, and it may be into nightmares, it may be into fantasies, whatever, and it's good to have protection then. So the protectors are actually 24 times 7. So he's beautiful, isn't he? Mm-hmm. Well, there are other horrible ones too. Yeah. But we aren't getting into those. So I will be commenting, and we can have a discussion line by line since you now have the text in front of you. But to begin with, is there any issue about the idea of if you want to, you can set out in the morning, and that if you want to, you can then offer it in the evening, either at sunset or when you get when you go to bed. So we're going to go through the lines of it, but before I do that, do you have anything you want to add, Michael?
No.
Okay.
Thank you.
That's right.
What's the name again?
This guy?
Mahakala.
He is a Mahakala.
Mahakala.
And that means Maha is great. Kala means black in this case. This is Sanskrit. So it means the great black one. And he has some friends too, which we won't get into too much, and a consort and all that.
So Michael, the word protectors.
Yes.
Like protect, I think people can think of protect different ways.
Yeah.
Because you said they're there to wake us up, which isn't necessarily how you would think of like someone protecting normally.
Okay.
I think the sort of standard like protectors, like somebody who stands there and makes sure nobody bad comes in the room.
Well, that's a way to look at it. Okay, the bad things could be in your own mind, or they could you could see them as external. These are all possibilities. So last week Michael talked about Padmasambhava, and on a Tibetan, somewhat mythological level, when Padmasambhava came into Tibet, there were all sorts of obstacles, and the obstacles were seen as demons, and it is said that Padmasambhava conquered the demons. He didn't kill them. He conquered them and bound them, and that's what the word samaya that you see here means, that he converted them in a sense so that they are protectors of the Dharma. So they're here to protect the Dharma, not to go against it.
So samaya means?
In this case it means binding. It can be a binding of a teacher-student, but in this case it's the binding of the demons of Tibet. Or it could be a binding of the dangerous forces in your mind, to turn them into protectors of your mind. So protection is actually a pretty good thing. So I hope you enjoy, first of all, looking at it and seeing that it says some really wonderful things in it, right? We can talk, we've been having images of nasty stuff, and now all of a sudden it says, may we yogins with our disciples obtain power, freedom from disease, long life, glory, fame, good fortune, and all great and vast enjoyments. Well, that's pretty wonderful, isn't it? Mm-hmm. Okay, so what can that mean? Anyone want to take a guess? What?
That's standard.
Okay, a couple of suggestions. When we're practicing and we're putting effort into our practicing, things can come up. Unpleasant things that we're not prepared for. Sometimes intense practice even brings up things that surprise us in our personal life and that interrupt our practice. So there's some danger in actually practicing very hard. One of the things we can do is, in the way of relaxation, is to realize that not only are we waking up to dangers and the need to overcome our ego, but we can also wake up to our entitlement to enjoy what's enjoyable, to have power when power is appropriate. So there's a bit of sense of honoring ourselves here, and we are not doomed to be underdogs. We can accept what good comes to us in our life and feel good about it. That's the meaning of it.
What is torma?
Oh, okay. Good question. Torma, in its original meaning, could be a ceremonial offering in the form of a cake. In Tibet, they happen to make them out of barley flour, because that's the only thing they have in Tibet. India, I'm sure they made more delicious things using rice and so on, but torma can be good. Emily makes very good torma. But here the...
Do you eat the torma?
What?
Do you eat the torma?
Yeah, there is a torma you eat. It's roasted, you roast the barley flour until it's nutty brown, and then it has sugar and liquor, like it has rum, whatever.
I can get into that offering. It's
that's an offering cake that you use ceremonially. But there are other kinds of torma as well. But I think what we're offering here, this is a tea offering, so it's just representational of a general offering.
Definitely. And Emily pointed out that tea can be a alternative to offering blood.
Because, you know, in the old days they used to sacrifice animals, and that just wasn't so great anymore. In Tibet, of course, they still do.
Lanka.
Yeah, I mean, they still do. But
yeah.
So the tea
and
itself.
India also.
Yeah, I know they do. Mm-hmm. But the tea, we don't go out and sacrifice animals. The tea is a representation.
You can buy powdered blood.
Okay, let's not go that far.
Add water. And you have what's called rakta, which is also something that you may or may not encounter down the road.
We actually, basically, are not going down that road.
you're going down the low road instead of the high road.
The
former road.
Okay, so as long as we're checking language, can you help us understand a little bit more about who is we yogins?
Oh, we yogins.
Who's we? What's a yogin?
Okay, that's us. It has to be us, okay?
And what's
the word yogin?
Yeah.
Essentially the same as a yogi.
Practitioner?
Practitioner, yes. It definitely means practitioner.
But it means also, it actually has to do with the word yoga. Yog. Binding.
Yolk.
Yoga is our cognate.
Mm-hmm.
So yoga is actually means in some sense realizing. There is sometimes used the term we don't know the yoga, or you know the yoga, meaning you got it, you understand the reality of the situation. You really achieve the, we call siddhi, and then we talk about siddhi, that's my concept. And so yogins are basically people who practice yoga.
Yoga is binding.
Also, yeah, binding, that's really what it really means.
Binding, joining.
Unite. It's really
uniting.
Yes.
Got it.
So we are yogins. We are. Yes.
I don't even know what a yogi is really. Is that what you're talking about last week? Is that a teacher?
A person who practices yoga.
We're talking about that right now.
So is the yogi the same as yogi?
Yeah, it's the same as yogi,
okay.
Basically.
Okay, so it's a practitioner of this. Someone who does the exercises.
Well, that can be a form of yoga. Basically, there's the implication of joining. So here, as householder yogis, we join our formal practice to how we live our life in all possible ways. There are some practitioners who are monks, but not anyone here. There are some practitioners who are wandering yogis or yogins, who have no place to stay, who wander around. It's pretty hard to... Homelessness is not accepted in this country, so we basically don't have any of them. In India, they do. So basically, except for some unusual people who decide to be monastics, we are all householder yogins, which means what we're joining is our practice and our... life, whatever we have to do. Yeah.
Well, in yoga, which many of us are familiar with, you're joining your mind, your breath, and your body. So there's also a joining or binding of those elements. So here it's a different, it comes from the same idea, but we're emphasizing a different aspect.
Another word that came up last time is the word bodhisattva. And in some sense, all of us have to be, whether or not we have formally taken an aspiring bodhisattva vow, it comes up all the time. It comes up in dedicating the merit. We all have to take our practice and see that we're practicing not just for our own benefit, but for everyone. And when we start to realize that, we are moving along the bodhisattva path. So the direction of moving in the bodhisattva path has to apply to all of us, or our practice will get kind of sick if we think it's just for me.
Mm-hmm. And so then, Michael, the term with our disciples, is that just... any one of us who's a practitioner, or is it...
Well, you may have disciples, you may not have disciples in some sense. You may find that there are people whose lives you influence who are not Buddhists particularly, but still they are people who you're influencing and you would like them to enjoy everything that's wished for here, right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So this is not a promise that only good things are going to happen to you, but it is a wakefulness and a way of guarding our minds so that we have a better chance of not stumbling badly on the way. So. It does mention power to accept what is good in our life, power to accept that we are deserving, as well as power to see that there is psychological mess in our minds. We don't want to have just one without the other. That would be unbalanced.
And what would staying be in this particular, is it literally what you think of in terms of being famous? Or is there a different definition of what that is?
Fame, okay. Well, do we want fame? How do we want fame? if we seek notoriety, that's not so good. So,
recognition?
Yeah, it's good to be recognized in the sense that you don't want to give up your power to have influence, okay?
Yeah, your name is the ability to influence people.
It doesn't, and of course it gets misused by charlatans. So this is always a rather double-edged thing.
I think of Pema Chodron there,
yes,
because she wasn't intending to be famous. She ended up having to raise money for Yampo Abbey. That's how she got started, giving talks in Nova Scotia, and then she just kept going. And her practice, and you know, she just expanded from that point on and on. So that kind of fame has been of benefit to many people who mm-hmm. listen to her talks and mm-hmm. learn the Dharma.
Mm-hmm. Yes. This has a funny taste in my mouth.
Mm-hmm.
But does it gives like a funny taste in my mouth because it sort of feels like when the Buddha was young and they didn't want him to know about bad stuff, it's like, mm-hmm. oh, let's let everything be really nice. And it's like I have a fortune that I carry around that says all the news you'll receive will be positive and uplifting, which never is true.
Right.
So to sort of say, I'd like everything to be really great.
Why are you carrying around with you?
Because I think it's so funny. Like,
how could that possibly be true?
Like, you go 2 minutes from something that you get bad news.
But this is a request, right?
But it's sort of like if we all ask for a pony for Christmas, it's not a real request in my mind.
So yeah,
that's what I'm struggling with. It doesn't seem like,
yeah, so,
like
so
I'm asking for something that I'm sure I'll never get.
What's positive? Mm. Positive isn't only getting things that you like necessarily, but you know, when we're talking like this, it's about support. We're talking about kind of when we talk about later we'll come to the word auspiciousness, that basically we're looking at situations where we can understand to how to view them, how we view things are basically the critical point. You might have what everybody's saying, oh, what a difficult experience, and you might say, fine, you know, I mean, you're willing to work with that. You're not viewing it as, oh dear, my life is ruined. It's all over with. You know, you can actually work with all the ups and downs that come, and you view them positively. We're talking about learning how to train our mind to see things positively, including difficult things.
Well, some of these things don't seem like freedom from disease and long life. Those are not, I don't think those are subject to interpretation. Those
no.
Like literal, I'm looking at those four lines, and the class I was taking in Cambridge, this is basically the list of the things we were supposed to meditate on the impermanence of. You know, and that's so it's sort of the idea of may we attain all these things. I'm not sure that's the lesson that I want to be trying to learn here.
Well, I don't think it is. Trungpa Rinpoche, yeah.
Yeah, one thing I think when I read this is that one of my favorite meditations is Buddha's five remembrances. I am the nature to grow old.
Exactly.
There's no way to escape growing ill. I'm the nature to die. There's no way to escape death. It's not so negative, but it's not actually. Yeah. It's just about impermanence. Mm-hmm. And I think this is doing the same thing. It's the other side of it. Yeah, we're going to grow old. We're going to get sick. We're going to die. We're going to lose our friends. We're gonna take nothing with us, and this is just saying on the other side, and maybe we have power, and that's gonna be permanent too, and maybe we have freedom from disease, long life. So he's just saying it's all good, it's all there, it's all real, and not just the bad stuff, or what we perceive to be positive.
So when you say yes, if we see this as getting what I want, right, that's not a good interpretation.
Right.
Trungpa Rinpoche, in his usual habit of turning everything upside down, said, well, the chant is to protect the Dharma from you.
May the Dharma survive us.
Yeah.
Not get in the way. Right.
Yeah.
That's a great way to look at it.
But at the same time, there is wakefulness is a protection against just going off the rail, okay? And so there is power that can help us in in the wakefulness of protectors. And the horrific form that is just fine because they wake us up. They are not enemies. The protector isn't here to call you to death or destroy you. He's there to bring you back to reality, which is a wonderful protection.
Yeah, it reminds me of all the Catholic saints. You know, the saint for nose cancer, the saint for knee cancer.
What? Really?
Oh my God. Yeah, my neighbor, George, sent me, you know, some things. And, you know, the saints for your ears, saints are unbelievable. Oh, yeah, the saints that protect you. And if you bury St. Anthony upside down in your front yard, your house will sell. That's true. People have done that.
Upside down?
Well, they may very, well help us.
They're good protectors.
Yeah, I mean, but, the, you know, it feels like that. There's, you know, and I think it's a nice thing. And I'm also thinking, you know, Jesus loves me. This, I know. It feels like that.
But don't forget everything we've been talking about in terms of Buddhist teaching. This doesn't. You could read this and go, "What? How does that fit?"
Yeah.
But remember where we're coming from. The basic view of non-self, egolessness. We're not trying to. It does say, you know, freedom from disease. Well, in reality, we aren't like looking for disease. But on the other hand, the basic teaching is, as Michael Fagan said, whatever comes, that is accepted as, in a way, good fortune. You know, maybe the divorce was very tough, but actually provided great liberation. Maybe the, you know, there are just some nods here, but I think yeah, so can I. So, so don't get stuck in
a conventional
view. Bring your Buddhist training mind to the words.
Here we're really asking for the good stuff.
Yeah.
But is it, here's where it would make sense to me. Yeah. If we're asking everybody wants a pony for Christmas, so that's not realistic. If we're asking that whatever's given to us, we could really appreciate because it's given with love, that I can get.
That's a good one.
Is that kind of what they're saying, like, see what comes to you as these good things?
Yeah, but there's a little bit more than that. You don't know what's lurking in your mind that could bring about disaster that you could wake from. And there's actually a possibility that it actually helps us to overcome some of our unconscious tendencies. And we're going to work on that in the next verse.
And plus,
which is about power.
And the other thing is, don't forget, if you think about you're here to benefit other people, if you have a longer life and you have time to study the Dharma and get more knowledgeable and skillful, you could bring greater benefit to other people. If you are not sick and, you know, wasting away in bed and you have enough strength to participate in the world and be kind to people and magnetize them, then that can be of benefit. Yeah.
I just read through this with Thich Nhat Hanh in mind.
Yeah.
You know, how I wish him to have power, freedom from disease,
yeah,
long life, glory, fame, good fortune. Why? Because of what he's done,
right,
and what he still, I would like him to do,
right,
and continue to learn from him, and have a children as well. So if I can wish those upon those people, why can't I wish upon myself?
Right.
Okay. We have.
Yeah. That's right.
We should move on now.
Okay. But that's exactly the point.
Okay. Grant us the cities of the pacifying and enriching actions, and so on. Samaya holders, those are the protectors, guard us, support us with all the cities. Now the word city means power, and the ultimate city is the power of enlightenment. But then there are the relative cities, and some of them might be minor, like causing objects that levitate or something, but the cities mentioned here are it says grant us the cities with pacifying, enriching actions and so on, and there are four of them: pacifying, enriching, magnetizing, and destroying. It doesn't name the other two here. Pacifying, enriching, magnetizing, and destroying. Now, this is an actual power that can come to you from supplication. And it means not getting trapped by the habitual patterns of your own mind, at least in one interpretation of it. So pacifying means, the power of pacifying is not reacting with immediate defensiveness and anger, but allowing the space to cool off the situation and to give you the opportunity to, for yourself and for anyone else you're engaged in, to have some clarity instead of immediately getting into confrontation. If you can pacify, you've created some peacefulness in the situation, which is the first of four. The next one is called enriching, and is the opposite of, we're going to go pretty quickly here, but I'll put references up, is the opposite of feeling powerless or envious and that you're in a defenseless position. Enriching is seeing that you actually have lots of resources. There are resources in the world. It's possible to bring in help. It's possible to bring in enriching to another person, to see that there are ways to create more benefit, to see what's beyond thinking I have no power, so the only thing I can do is to kick or feel helpless. So we're asking for that power to come to our mind. And the third one is magnetizing, and that is to actually attract good energy, and it may mean to attract people so that they can bring help to you. And it's the opposite of feeling that I have to go out and seduce someone. Only by being seductive can I bring anyone into my power. Here with spaciousness we can relax, and attracting can come of itself by what we have to offer. And the last one is destroying. And it can be used. It usually, unless you're a very powerful realized yogin, doesn't mean you go out and kill someone. But it may be the situation has to be killed. We've diffused our own angry responses and reflexiveness. We've brought in resources to the situation. We've magnetized the situation, and there's something not healthy that really should not go on. It's not our personal opinion, it's not our defensiveness, but sometimes there's a no which has to be decisive.
And also be subjugating. Subjugating, so thinking about, take, you know, you're finding a situation that's difficult, negative, neurotic, you can subjugate in the context of the Dharma. So it has that dual meaning there.
Can you elaborate on the subjugation?
Well, in other words, everything is your fundamental potential, so we're not trying to destroy our potential, but actually make use of it in a proper way.
Right.
And so if you have a neurotic tendency, by subjugating it, you make it available for more healthy purposes. In other words, it's a form of intelligence that's been somehow perverted or basically distorted. And so what you're doing is learning how to make that positive, you work positively. When Michael had mentioned earlier, Padmasambhava was taming the so-called evil spirits that were oftentimes connected with land protectors or cultural elements. And so he subjugated those. That's what it means to have that, when we're talking about that. And he actually had them, so they actually served the Dharma instead of hindering it.
So we may have to cut off and say no to something in ourselves.
Mm-hmm.
It's possible it's something in the world that we have to just say no, we're not going there.
Right.
In a work situation, if someone's being very disruptive or inappropriate, sometimes there's just sort of a cutting that has to happen, because it can't be just sort of let's be nice and, you know, let's hope it gets better.
Indulgence.
So there's a kind of a wakefulness and an action that is actually very direct.
Compassion.
It does. Right.
Okay, so may there be no untimely death, illness, dunas, or obstructing spirits for us. May we have no nightmares, ill omens, or bad dealings. So there's a word here, dun, a Tibetan word. Yeah?
Distraction or something like that.
Dun basically translates as demon.
Okay.
It could translate as psychological obstacle, but more literally it would be a demon.
Okay.
And you can understand demons in whatever way that seems appropriate. In the West, we have that concept too, right?
True.
Like any Clint Eastwood character in the movie is someone who has this demon. You agree with that?
Got it. Yeah.
Okay.
Got it.
And the goons or demons can cause sudden psychological eruption for us. In Clint Eastwood's case, it's always a dun of anger.
Yeah.
But we can be subject to duns of envy or duns of passion. Any emotion can erupt within us. So we're asking for the power not to let our mind be subject to such disruptions. Obstructing spirits, that's kind of the same thing, or maybe it's slightly different. May we have no nightmares. Okay, so we're saying this for the day and the night. May our day be wakeful. May our night be protected too, so that our mind doesn't go into dangerous, unaware situations, so that our sleep and our dream is protected. No nightmares, ill omens, or bad dealings. You can take that as you like, but the idea here is basically protect us more, probably in a psychological sense, in a beyond where our conscious or unconscious egotistical hidden stuff is going to take us, and may we have some protection against that causing damage to us.
Would this happen if we were enlightened? I mean, it just feels that bothers me a lot.
Well, if you're completely enlightened, then you don't need this. But you don't need to be here anyway. None of us would really be in this class if we were completely enlightened yet. So this is for us on the path.
I feel like we're asking for it. We're not necessarily expecting to get it. I'd like the pony.
Well, you might get it, okay?
There's an old Jewish joke on that topic. Yeah, God did answer your prayers. He said no.
That's a very interesting point. You can study that a lot and learn from it, actually. There's a lot there. But yes, you might get protection. It might really protect your mind from going into either self-destruction of intention or self-destruction of unconsciousness. Like in the evening, when we flop down, it's a point where we actually are inviting illness into our body by blanking our mind and being unaware of what we do. So that transition point is a good point to have wakefulness. And the night is too. That's why we bring up an offering in the morning, and then at some point find it time to offer it outside.
So would you just say this in the morning and at the night?
No. In the morning we just take the tea and offer it. You can be mindful. That
what do you mean by offer here?
No, like,
you just set it on the tea,
make the tea, and you offer it. Yeah.
The tea has been made, and we put it in front of a Mahakala to remind us. And it's going to stay there all day. We've gone out of the house. It stays there all day. Mm-hmm. And then we did that this morning, but we did something a little bit unusual. We put it into a jar and brought it here. But that's the only time I've ever done anything like that.
When do you stay here?
In the evening.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
So the way we just.
Yeah. Okay.
So you hold the tea as Michael did. So you would recite the chant standing up, holding the tea, facing the picture. So it's like this is at night.
Okay.
So when you're in the morning, you just put it in front of the picture. You don't have the same thing.
Oh, okay.
And then when you're ready to take out the tea at night, you pick it up, stand and face the picture, and then when you say the chant, and then you take it out, and then you offer it, you know, into the bushes or something.
Yeah, so
it's
like
it could be at dusk. So that period at dusk, that transition between daylight and dark, is actually the same thing as when Chris sneezed, that sense of, we say Gesundheit, that's protection against spirits entering in. That's a weakness because your mind goes blank. So it's the same idea. It's this transition period between day and night. And, you know, maybe these roots of all of this is, you know, quite old, I'm sure. So that period, there's more chance of, you know, like falling or stumbling, or you just sort of think of the, you know, almost like pre-cocktail hour, that sense of you're just ready to collapse, right? So, yeah. So that gap is the point where we're noticing and wanting to make this offering so we can stay awake and not sort of collapse into this space of,
But you may not even be around it at that time, and you can do it later.
You could do it before you go to bed.
Yeah,
I have sort of, a very general question, which is, what is it about this particular set of chants that is, you know, why are these the ones that are selected? I assume there's a really vast body of writing.
There are hundreds.
You know, and what is it, you know, and so basically there are, you know, thousands of books of Dharma, and these are the pages that are chosen. I just sort of, it may be a little off the track of what we're talking about now.
We had to make some choice, obviously.
Yeah.
We're doing the ones in our tradition, okay? So there are plenty of other places and ways of doing things. Another one we could introduce at some point, which you've already had some familiarity with, is the Heart Sutra. We'll talk about that at some point. But we have to work with our lineage. We can't go all over the world picking up this and that. And we have to take the ones that are simplest and meaningful. So we did a little bit daring by giving you Padmakara because it starts to sound supernatural.
Yeah.
And
Padmasambhava,
but it really isn't. And here this is that was for the morning, if you want to do that. And this is for the evening as a sense of protection. And it's kind of in the same tradition. And just as Padmasambhava bound some of these protectors, so now we're working with them. So whether it's a psychological or a mythological idea, there's a continuity between these choices we made.
And also we picked some for the morning and some for night. And we picked the sort of the simplest ones in a way.
Okay, thank you.
Yeah.
Okay, the last verse is pretty obvious, given that we have to aspire in some way towards being bodhisattvas. May the world enjoy peace, have good harvest, abundant grain, expansion of dharma, and glorious auspiciousness. Clear? Right? We're offering not just for ourselves, but for the whole world.
Right.
Can you tell a little bit about auspiciousness?
Auspiciousness? May it work out well. May there be some synchronicity. May things go together in a way that works.
May the right situations arise so that I may progress along the path of Dharma, so I can be of benefit to others. So, you know, may things come together in ways that
be blessed.
I almost thought of taking the last line first, but the last line, accomplish whatever mind desires. Now, can you tell me what that means?
Oh boy.
What does that mean? Accomplish whatever mind desires. This is very important.
Go along the way that we are at the time traveling. Because mind is vulnerable, but maybe travel with it. Maybe understand it.
But we're asking accomplishment here.
Yeah.
Okay. So one tool for understanding Dharma, if you don't quite know how to answer the question, what does this mean? Try answering the opposite question. What does it not mean? Mm-hmm. Does it mean, may I get what I want?
Yeah,
oh Lord, won't you buy me a Mercedes Benz?
There's an element of effort here, as opposed to just sitting and waiting.
Well, so it doesn't mean if I work hard, can I get what I want? Either.
It's like you've accomplished. It's like that you've landed somehow. And
a little more.
But accomplishment usually means like something I did and I completed. Mm-hmm. Like you wouldn't say, I was walking to the store and I didn't get there, but I accomplished it.
Well, this is who are you speaking to when you say accomplish? Accomplish is a command. You're saying accomplish whatever mind desires. Who are you addressing when you say that?
You're
not talking to the protectors.
The protectors.
You're talking to you're addressing the protectors. May the protectors accomplish what mind desires. In other words, all the things that have been brought up already in this entire recitation are actually things you're invoking or supplicating those protectors to ensure that these desires, that these wishes that you have just stated really come about.
Mm-hmm. Okay, but more important, as I see it, is what does the word mind mean here? What is mind here?
Is it heart mind? Not mine.
It's not my mind, yeah.
No, it's not mind. It's the greater mind.
Is it the collective unconscious mind?
Well, that's a theory. Okay, mind is, I think the most important thing about mind is it's not about self. It's not may I get what I want. It's not about may I get what I want. It's not about, Lord, would you give me a Mercedes Benz? It's, accomplish whatever mind desires, and mind is not me. So we're not asking for anything for me. Okay? We have asked for me in a sense. May I have protection and so on, but accomplish whatever mind desires is beyond me. So we have about 1 minute left or so. And we have another chant. And you're very familiar with it, and it's very good to be said here.
One last question. Why concluding request? Why concluding?
Well, actually, sometimes in longer rituals, there may be five or six requests to Mahakala, to Vitali, to Ekajati, to a whole bunch of protectors.
This is the last one.
This is to all
the
of
end of the row here.
Okay.
And it's also concluding our offering. Yeah.
And it's also the assemblies of oceans of Samaya Bound. So it's everybody that you may not have actually said individual chants to.
They're swarming all over the place in your mind.
They're in the air.
Ones that you don't know about.
They're all
over. Yeah, they're all over there. So then we dedicate the merit, and that should be pretty clear, right? It's about, we aren't asking to hold on to the merit for ourselves, because if we do, it's going to go rotten. We have to offer it up, whatever it is that we hope for, whatever merit we have accomplished, if we've accomplished something or other this evening. It's for the benefit of the whole universe, right? So we have to give it away. Bodhisattva idea, which has to pervade Dharma practice. Is that self-evident? Okay, so from now on, we're going to recite the four Dharmas. In the beginning, we're going to recite the dedication of merit at the end, and we'd rather not stop to pass things out, which is why we have the cards. If you know both of those and there's only four lines to each, then you don't need cards or anything else. And the whole thing is on our website. Instruction, chants and songs, drop down the menu and you'll get to it. Any other comments?